The law of scarcity. Definitely a law that has been overused, but still a law that's critical to your success. If you give somebody 4.5 months to pay their taxes, guess how long they take? If you give them 2 years to make a decision, they're going to take 2 years. The role with scarcity and urgency is to help people make the decision in a timely manner. You have to understand that losing out on, let's say, $100 bills causes more emotional distress than gaining $100 gives you pleasure. You need to learn to get anyone to take immediate action. This is a law of scarcity. Online auctions drive me nuts. When I go to an online auction, I find an item, I like it, and I put in what I think is a reasonable winning bid. I promise myself that I won't bid any higher, but I always get caught. When I get the outbid notice, I can't believe somebody outbid me. What if I can't find this item again? They obviously think this item is worth more than I do. Then I find myself wanting it even more, whatever it is, and I bid far more than I originally intended. The thrill of winning usually outweighs the pain of the price I paid. Even in 1996, when Jackie Kennedy's personal belongings were up for auction, everybody knew such items would reel in top dollar. More than 100,000 catalogs were sold prior to the auction. And then the week the belongings were put on public display, more than 40,000 people took part. There was hype, there was anticipation, and all that energy surrounding the event catapulted the prices far beyond originally anticipated prices. For example, a brooch, estimated to get around $6,000 to $8,000, sold for $415,000. John F. Kennedy's golf clubs were estimated at $700 to $900, but sold for $772,000. A wooden cigar box, priced at $200,000, sold for $547,000. Even a cigarette lighter inscribed with the word J, estimated to be priced at $300, sold for $85,000. Remember, what we can't have is always more desirable and exciting than what we already possess. Even something simple like potatoes. Yes, potatoes. Nothing special, right? But there was a time in history, the late 1700s, when potatoes were not a popular food. The French thought potatoes were connected with leprosy. The Germans thought they were nothing better than feed for livestock. And Russian peasants actually thought they were poisonous. Then Catherine the Great came along and turned potatoes into gold. She had high fences installed to enclose her potato fields. Signs dotted the land warning the Russian citizens not to steal her potatoes. Now, all of a sudden, with the potatoes suddenly off limits, they became the talk of the town. Imagine what those peasants were thinking as they watched the big tall fences go up. Wait a minute, why are they fencing in the potato fields? Why are the rich keeping the potatoes to themselves? Why are we restricted to the same old beef stew every single day? We deserve potatoes too. We need potatoes. Give us potatoes. And the rest is history. They got their potatoes. Scarcity drives us nuts. You see, the law of scarcity plays a large role in the persuasion process. We want to be the ones to own the rare items or to get the last widget on the shelf. The more scarcity of an item increases, the more the item increases in value and the greater urge to own it. Whenever choice is limited or threatened, the human need to maintain a share of the limited commodity makes us crave it even more. Scarcity increases the value of any product or service. Scarcity drives people to action, making us act quickly for the fear of missing out on an opportunity. Think about the people that line up in the after-holiday sales and the after-Thanksgiving sales. They go nuts. People get trampled. These aren't human beings, but the fear of missing out on that special DVD player or the special that's half off for an hour only drives people nuts. Potentially losing something before we've even had an opportunity to possess it drives people to action. We don't want to miss out on anything we could have had. We want to get around any restriction placed upon us. We begin to feel uptight and want back our freedom. This causes tension and unrest. The law of scarcity not only pertains to physical products, but also to time, information, price, and even knowledge. Then there's the threat of potential loss. Anytime somebody feels their freedom to choose, think, or act is being restricted, they experience psychological reactance and attempt to restore their freedom. With this restriction on freedom, we are driven to latch onto that thing which we fear will be restricted even more. Instead of standing by and saying, okay, I'll give that up, we take the opposite approach. Suddenly, that restricted item is even more important to us. That's why researchers call this reactance. It's an intensely motivational state, and it causes us to be emotional, single-minded, and sometimes even irrational. We hate feeling restricted. We are so highly motivated to resolve anything that makes us feel that way. It is due to the reactants that we act, and we want it now. See, there was a study involving a group of male toddlers, and this illustrated just how powerful the law of scarcity is, even and especially in small children. And nothing changes as adults, we just do it in a different way. So in this study, the toddlers were brought into a room, and each one of these rooms held two very exciting and two very appealing toys. A plexiglass barrier was set up so that one of the toys sat next to it and the other sat behind it. It was restricted. The barrier wasn't very tall, so some of the toddlers could simply reach over the top and grab for the toy. For others, the barrier was still too high to reach over, so they could only reach that particular toy if they went around and behind the plexiglass. You see, what the researchers wanted to see if the obstructed toy, being more scarce, being restricted, would draw more attention and be more desirable. The boys who could easily reach over the top showed no preference toward the obstructed or unobstructed toy. The unobstructed toy was approached just as frequently and just as quickly. Now, this is where it gets interesting. For the boys who could not reach over the top, the obstructed toy was clearly the more desirous of the two. In fact, the boys made contact with it 3 times faster than with the unobstructed toy. Even in toddlers, there was an urge to defy restriction of choice. In another study involving children, researchers told the children they could select from a wide array of candy bars. Then they pointed out one particular candy bar and told them they should not choose that one. But any of the others would be fine. The children, just like adults would, reacted to the threat to their freedom of choice by choosing the bar they'd been told not to select. In doing so, they felt they preserved their freedom to select whatever bar they wanted. The law of scarcity works because it makes people feel like they will lose an opportunity to act and choose if they don't do so immediately. The threat of such loss creates urgency in our decision-making. Remember human nature. We need help to make decisions or we'll take all the time in the world. It's very few people that make decisions quickly. Now, let me back up a little bit. As we study successful people, very successful millionaires, they have the ability to make decisions very quickly, and they change them very slowly. Indecision's a thief of opportunity. But most of the people you'll be working with that you're attempting to persuade need reasons to take action now. It is human nature. Have you ever noticed how people are often more motivated when faced with potentially losing something than when they might take steps of their own accord and gain something of equal value? Studies have verified that this is a common and a consistent phenomenon. For example, do you think homeowners would feel more urgency to act if they were told how much money they were going to lose if they didn't improve the insulation of their home, or if they were told how much money they would save? Well, studies show they are more likely to act if they're told about the potential loss. That's how we are programmed. You see, the mental trigger of potential loss causes such great anxiety in people that they act to prevent the loss, even though they likely are not really interested in the product itself. Imagine making a decision where you have all day to make up your mind, and you have the reassurance that when you return tomorrow, the item will still be available at the same good price. Such decisions take days to make. However, when scarcity enters the picture and you feel the availability of the product, the timing or even the price is bound to change without notice, the mental trigger of scarcity begins to operate. You are driven to acquire something to alleviate that threat of potential loss. That's why shoe salespeople always bring back the last pair of your shoes available in your size, in that store, in that city, in the country, when the sale, of course, ends today, and you usually buy them. And it makes you wonder if that's also why Adam and Eve, who had the entire Garden of Eden to play in, couldn't stay away from the one forbidden fruit. See, the challenge is most people use the law of scarcity in the wrong way. And on the flip side, we've all been burned by the law of scarcity. I remember buying a car, and the salesperson says, well, you better hurry and buy it because someone's going to look at it tonight. And I'm like, yeah, right. I'm going to sleep on it. I'll come back tomorrow and get it. When I came back the next day, to my dismay, the car had been sold. So we've all been burned, but we also have seen times when it's been used in the wrong way. What we can't have is always more desirable and exciting than what we already possess. As the adage says, the grass is always greener on the other side of the fence. Any parent knows the result of telling a child she can't have or do something. The child will immediately drop everything and want the one thing she can't have. You tell your teenagers, you can't date them, no way, no how, it actually makes it worse. Look at Romeo and Juliet. The forbidden nature of the relationship made it even stronger and more appealing to them. Parents always need to be cautioned about forbidding their children from doing something, from friends, or not having certain friends because the law of scarcity will come back to haunt them. The manner in which an object becomes scarce also contributes to making it more desirable. In a particular study, researchers gave subjects a cookie jar containing 10 cookies. Then, taking the jar back, the subjects were given a new jar containing only 2 cookies. So they started out with 10. The jar came back with only 2 cookies in there. So the first group of subjects were told the cookies had been given away to other participants because of the demand for the study. The other group was told their cookies were taken away because a proctor had made a mistake and had given them the wrong cookie jar. Pretty simple. But the results indicated that the cookies that had become scarce through social demand were rated considerably higher than the cookies that had become scarce through the proctor's oversight. They were the most highly rated of all cookies used in the study. The law of scarcity even works when the desired object or thing isn't even going to really benefit the recipient. There was a county in Florida that enacted legislation against the sale of laundry detergents that contained phosphates. Now, nobody really knows what phosphates are, but phosphates negatively impact the environment and it did not help clean the clothes. So it's a no-brainer to take them out. They don't help the clothes, they hurt the environment. Now, the interesting thing is, before the ban went into effect, stores experienced an increase in sales for the phosphate-containing detergents. After the ban was underway, stores within the city saw a drop in laundry detergent sales overall because stores in surrounding counties not affected by the ban saw an increase in sales for the phosphate-containing detergents. They wanted their phosphates. They couldn't take them out. They didn't even know what phosphates were, but they wanted them. Careful what you take away. I was working for an unnamed university. During the holidays, we'd always receive a turkey. It was a gift. No one could remember the last time they didn't get a turkey. They decided to give out books. Now, last thing a professor needs is another book, first of all, and second of all, it's a gift. We should appreciate it regardless. But since there was a takeaway there, there was some scarcity, some people actually got very upset. Even the laundry detergent. They took away the phosphates. But here's an interesting side effect to that. Later on, when consumers were polled as to which detergents were better, the residents where the ban had taken place rated the restricted detergents higher than any others in all categories. The law of scarcity had made the limited product dramatically more appealing. What about scarcity in marketing? Psychologist Anthony Pretkanis of the University of California, Santa Cruz has said, "As a consumers, we have a rule of thumb. If it is rare or scarce, it must be valuable and good." And department stores use the law of scarcity to bait customers into uncontrollable shopping frenzies. Fights break out at department stores when people are going after those scarce items, which are being offered at a bargain price for a limited time. The lower prices are bait, a loss leader for the store, but certain to generate a buying frenzy that is contagious. Blinded by scarcity, consumers will buy anything and everything, even if they don't need it. You see, patrons buy in 3 DVD players. You ask the boy and they don't know. Limit 3. I go to the supermarket to buy ice cream. Limit 4. I come home with 4. Why 4? Limit 4. All they know is that the store said supplies were limited, the sale was only for today, and each shopper was limited to 3. So they bought 3 DVD players. See, some stores have this limited numbered thing down to perfection. Often we go shopping, but are only casually interested, telling the salesperson, "Oh, just looking." We glance over the packaging, examine the sale sign, and the salesperson plays a number game. Approaching us, she says, "It's a great model, isn't it? Especially at this price. Unfortunately, I just sold our last model." And we feel a little disappointed. No longer available, we feel like now we really want it, even though we were only mildly interested before. Then we might ask, "Is there one in the back or another location? Is there any way I can get this special deal?" Salesperson says, "Well, let me see what I can do. If I can get another for you at this price, will you take it?" There's a bait, trap. "Yes, I'll take it." Funny thing is, we don't even realize the trap is being set, so the technique works like a charm. We are asked to commit to a product when it seems like it will soon be totally unavailable and therefore seems incredibly desirable. Threatened with potentially losing a great deal, we agree. Then, of course, the salesperson comes back with great news. The product will be shipped to the store in 3 days. In the meantime, all you have to do is to sign the sales contract. We also see the law of scarcity being frequently employed by home shopping networks. They know that rare things are highly valued in our society, so they always have a little clock running in the upper corner of the screen. You only have 10 minutes to purchase these precious items, and the clock lets you know how little time you have left to make this buy of a lifetime. You also see the products being sold. There's a limited supply. There's not that many left. Home shopping channels make the time and the product the scarce resource. Or it could be said, we're never going to sell them again. This is the last time. They create scarcity to the general public. So as we talk about limited supply, have you ever wondered why some in-restaurants continue to have waiting lines outside? Long lines seem to make the restaurants even more fashionable. When they increase the length of the line by even a greater degree, more people want to come. And then you ask yourself, well, why don't restaurants eliminate the waiting line and increase their prices? They don't because removing the lines would eliminate the scarcity factor and demand would collapse. Remember the Beanie Baby phenomenon created by Ty Warner? The law of scarcity made the Beanie Baby's popularity soar. There weren't enough to go around. Did you get it? Did you find it? When Ty Warner would take them off the shelf and limit the availability of certain Beanie Babies, prices skyrocketed for the discontinued and suddenly rare and valuable Beanie Babies. Spurred on by the threat of losing out, collectors began hoarding the stuffed animals and speculating as to which ones would be retired next. The law of scarcity was also used to create demand for diamonds. In spite of a dramatic leap in production from 15 million carats to a whopping 100 million carats, De Beers, the company maintaining a monopoly over the diamond supply, still managed to render the diamonds scarce. Running only 10 diamond sales per year and inviting only a select number of dealers, De Beers could easily control the supply and pricing. Not only this, but each invited dealer got only a limited amount of diamonds that De Beers selected for them. And if they ever complained, they were not invited back. Then there was an owner of a successful beef importing company decided to conduct a study among his staff. The staff members were assigned to call the company's customers and ask them to purchase beef in one of three ways. The first group just heard the usual sales pitch before giving their orders. The second group was given the usual sales pitch, but they were also presented with evidence that imported beef was expected to be in short supply in the coming months. The third group was given the usual sales pitch, as well the information about the beef's upcoming scarcity, but they were also told the news was not available to the general public, and that the information provided was exclusive to the company. Not surprising, the sudden demand for beef created by those phone calls exceeded the supply on hand, and the company had to scramble to fill the orders. Customers alerted to the coming scarcity of the beef bought double the amount of those receiving only the standard sales pitch. But here's where it gets interesting. Those learning about the scarcity, and that it was secret information, bought six times the amount of those hearing just the standard sales pitch. Or what about the time when you took your child to be photographed? They take 10 different shots, and then they send you a proof for each. You're told to select the shots you like best, how many copies of each you'd like. Then you were told the negatives would be destroyed within a certain number of months. Of course, you feel like you'd better get all the copies of the shots you want now because you won't be able to later. So your job as a great persuader is to use this in the right way and create allure. Let me explain that. Think about when a woman wants to come across as more attractive to a certain man. If she can set things up so she will happen to meet this guy well, on a date with some other successful, attractive man, then she will come across as more desirable than if she were merely to meet him alone at some bar or club. What if you were selling real estate? You'd be smart to have several interested people along for the tour, since the interest of one person will heighten the interest of another. Instead of your buying thinking, okay, I'm going to try to wheel and deal here. Oh, there's a crack over here. Or what about this? They're going to think, I better jump on this. What are they thinking? I think they want to do it. I need to get it before them. In fact, in one experiment, students were given a written description of a particular novel. Half of the students' copies included the description, a book for adults only, restricted to those 21 years and over, while the other half contained no such restriction. When polled about their feelings toward the novel, students reading about the restriction indicated that they thought they would like to read the book and wanted to read it, while students who had not read about the restriction expressed significantly less interest. Restricting access to information or material often makes it much more appealing. This topic typically brings to mind material of sexually explicit nature. Scarcity can apply to anything, however. Consider a form of censorship at the University of North Carolina. When students learned that a speech in favor of co-ed dorms was banned, they became more smitten with the idea of co-ed dorms. It is of great significance to realize that. Without ever having heard the actual speech, the censorship alone heightened the students' interest. The students didn't even need to hear the speech to be persuaded to support or become committed to the notion of co-ed dorms. And remember that study from the University of Chicago Law School when we talked about obligation? The law of scarcity was also at work in this scenario. When the judge ruled that the evidence of the defendant's insurance was inadmissible and therefore had to be disregarded, the jurors actually increased the award amount. The censored information was actually embraced even more, jumping the damage payment up by $13,000. And we see this everywhere. Clubs and restaurants with exclusive memberships. Then what about Disney and their DVDs? Last time this century, last time this decade, it's going to go back in the Disney vault. Does it work? Oh, yeah. And they do it. They take it back. We know they're going to take it back. Airlines only holding your seat for 24 hours. They might sell out. Collectors of antiques, baseball cards, special by invitation only sales, going out of business sales, offers not available in stores, exclusive one-time offers, or even a membership to an exclusive club. So how do we use the law of scarcity? Well, scarcity is necessary to help us make a decision. Most of us fear the point of making the decision, so we naturally want to put it off and allow ourselves time to think about it. As a persuader, however, it is important to note that if your prospect puts off the decision, chances are they won't make one. They'll keep putting it off and putting it off. You could have the perfect product, something they really need right now, but if you let them go, you don't have to make a decision, you know they won't be back later. They're not going to come back and say, okay, I decided, let's do it. Now that happens every once in a while, but not the majority of the time. Creating scarcity helps your prospect make the final decision. It also eliminates the amount of time you waste tracking down a prospect who is still just twiddling their thumbs about your product or service. You can create legitimate scarcity with your product or service without violating your morals. Remember, this reactant, this scarcity, is an intense motivational state where we become single-minded and irrational. We feel that we've been wronged and we don't want to take it. And we have to do something about it. We hate restriction, missing out. They want to take full advantage of every opportunity and not regret not doing something. We see it during the holiday season, especially with gifts. All of a sudden, there's scarcity. There's not enough. It's a popular gift. Nintendo has done this. Beanie Babies has done this. Cabbage Patch Dolls. We can go on and on. The Xbox. Oil and gas and water shortages. People tend to go nuts. I remember one time being on a cruise, and we were stopping the island of Grenada. And we were told at dinner time, but this is the only place in the world where you can get nutmeg syrup. You've got to get nutmeg syrup. You can't get it everywhere else. So we went ashore, did our thing, and we came back with nutmeg syrup. Now, what is nutmeg syrup? I've still never tried it, but we got it because of the scarcity. And I'll probably never try it, but we got our nutmeg syrup. Even with our health, study was done delivering pamphlets urging young women to check for breast cancer. Now, what's more successful? What they have to gain by doing it or what they have to lose? So what they found is what could be lost by not doing this examination was more persuasive than what could be gained. It's also part of reverse psychology. For example, this parent had trouble getting their preschooler to get in the car. School was done. It was time to go. The child thought they had freedom to stay with their friends. But then what the parent did, they pretended to leave, and the child hurried to get to the car because the freedom to choose had been taken away. It was a loss of freedom. So how do we make this work? To create scarcity, be sure you have the following elements firmly in place. Give your prospects a deadline or point of no return. You need to have a deadline. That's number one. We all operate on deadlines at home and in business. Persuasion is the same. They are what cause us to take action. If there's no immediate reason to take action now, we won't. Many people don't pay their bills until they have to. No deadline means no action. Number two, make sure there's limited space, limited numbers, or limited access. If your prospect feels like they're competing for a limited resource, they will be much more motivated to take action. When people fear they're going to miss out on a great deal, they feel an urgency to act. Think of all the shoppers at the closeout sales. They've got to speed over there and check things out before all the stuff is picked over. Otherwise, with the store's limited supplies, they'll miss the deal forever. This limit could also include access to information. Our response to banned information is a greater desire to receive that information and a more favorable outlook toward it than we had before the ban was set in place. Number three, we might lose out. The prospect must recognize that there is a potential loss of freedom or limit to their actions if they don't take advantage of your offer. People will always overvalue the thing you are restricting. Create a state of emotion in which your prospect fears the loss. This is an overwhelming feeling they won't be able to ignore. Motivated by restriction, this prospect becomes an emotionally motivated buyer. They will not be denied. The more you deny them, the more energy you give to your cause. You have denied their right to something, so they'll do anything to have it. I can recall occasions when I tried to talk people out of purchasing a certain product because I honestly felt it wasn't appropriate for them. The more I took the product away, the more they wanted it. Think about all those sweepstake messages. You may already be a winner. They used to say, you can be a winner. You feel the difference? You may already be a winner versus you can be a winner. But the notion that you may be a winner already spoke even more loudly. Do you think people can throw away such an envelope without even opening it just to check and make sure? With the change in the slogan, the company experienced a marked increase in their success. Suddenly, people were afraid they might lose something they potentially already had. And as Jim Rohn says, without a sense of urgency, desire loses its value. Which brings us to number four, restrict freedom. We want what we can't have. If we're told a product is or will soon be unavailable, we want it even more. Our desire goes up and so does the urgency to act. Create a scenario where you tell your prospect that the offer is only good for so long. Tell them they have to act now to take advantage of the opportunity or they will lose out. This technique works so well because we have all walked away from offers like this before, and they really haven't been there when we returned. Walk through clearance centers and you'll see signs on the different, let's say, furniture, and it'll say sold. These signs create urgency because somebody else has found a deal and you should have found it first. You see, in sales, this urgency is called the takeaway close. If you take away your prospect's opportunity to get involved with your product or service, they naturally want it more, assuming there's a need, want, or desire for your product or service. This strategy also works well when you want to see if your prospect really is interested in what you're providing. If you are stuck and not sure how much time you want to spend with a prospect, or if they are looking and not willing to make a decision, do a takeaway. If they are truly interested in your product, they will perk up and they will become more interested. If not, they'll walk away. Either way, you've saved yourself time and energy. One of the amazing things that's hitting the radar screens at the Persuasion Institute about scarcity is, first of all, I mentioned it's overused, it's used in the wrong way, and the believability factor has dropped dramatically. And people are motivated in different ways. Some people are motivated by inspiration, some people are motivated by desperation. So to get this to work, let me tell you a little secret. When you need to create scarcity or do a takeaway, two things need to happen. You need to have a takeaway and you need to have a reward. Let me explain. You need to say, this offer is good for 3 days. That's a scarcity. And if you can do it before 3 days, I will give you an extra percent discount. The reward. Scarcity versus reward. The sale ends today. Scarcity. And if you can do it today, instead of giving you a 6-month guarantee, I'll give you a 12-month guarantee. So you need to include some type of scarcity, some type of urgency, some type of reactance, and buffer that with some type of reward for taking action. Scarcity works. You need to create it in a legitimate way. And stick to your guns. They come back the next day, don't give them the deal. Too many persuaders had sacrificed giving the deal no matter what instead of sticking to their guns about scarcity and urgency. It works. It's a simple law of persuasion, but you need to master it to get your prospects to take action.